Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, a bird dog enthusiast running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning all types of hunting dogs. Do you like to be outdoors like I do? Hunting, fishing, hiking? If so, ONX is the app for you. I've been a loyal ONX user since 2013. It's the one app I can honestly say I use daily. While hunting, I know where I'm at all times. I mark trails, feeding, bedding areas, and the list goes on. When I'm traveling, I use it to pre-scout all the new places that I'm blessed to hunt. While out west hiking Yellowstone, I knew exactly where every trail went and the difficulty of each one. And here's a secret. I even use it to mark my favorite fishing spots. It's been a game changer at work. I've used it numerous times to get in touch with property owners. I even landed MedFlight one time in the middle of nowhere using the GPS coordinates. ONX has so many great features and tools, you can literally use it for everything. It is by far the best mapping app on the market. So get started with ONX today using K920. That's the letter K, number 920, and know where you stand. It is Wednesday. We all know what that means. I'm going to bring you another new episode of What's Up Wednesday. We're getting our weekly dose of canine training know-how, and there is a lot going on. It has been busy, busy, busy. So try to catch you, get you up to date, and we've got some things we're looking forward to in the future too. So stay tuned in for the end of this, and we'll get you pointed in the right direction. But it's a beautiful morning here. I am going to try to hit the river today and do a couple hours of fishing along with some yard work. The springtime, everybody knows that brings the grass growing at unpredicted rates. Like my grass, I've got spots out here that look like it's knee high, and then I've got spots that are bare. Actually, I need to plant some grass seed because these puppies have absolutely destroyed the yard. And speaking of puppies, that's what we're going to talk about today. So I finished up the loading process. I don't know, that whole process, I probably spent a little longer on it than I normally would just because weather and time constrictions. You know, it only took me a few minutes in the evening to go do, you know, get stuff loaded up, get them loaded up. I did take them on a another ride day before yesterday, just to switch up because I'm actually in the middle of another process. So I thought, hey, I got a few minutes. Let's see if they've forgotten what we told them a month ago. So the pups are pushing 7 months old now. So a lot of these videos that you guys are seeing are probably a month behind. So what I mean is the pups are a month younger than what they actually are to date. So I know I am behind the ball. You can fuss at me, but I'm not in a big rush. I've got plenty of time between now and June. And I'm going to Canada in June. The pups will not be a year old at that time. So I'm not even sure if I'm going to take any of them. If I do take any of them, it'll probably just be one or two. It will not be all four of them at one time. That's just too much with too much inexperienced dogs. And, you know, it's a long trip. You're going up, you know, trying to have a successful hunt for a week. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. But let's finish up the loading process. And I will actually drop some reels or some pictures here and there. I've been using my GoPro some and trying to get them coming in and out of the truck and just kind of showing you what's going on. And I actually had put the GoPro inside the dog box and done a short, when I did a short ride the other day, but about 30 seconds into it, Bishop decided she wanted to investigate what that GoPro was, and she actually knocked it down. So the whole recording was nothing but the GoPro laying in the bed of the truck looking face down. So didn't get much out of that, but I'm going to try that again. Attention hound hunters and outdoor enthusiasts. Are you ready to experience the thrill of fair chase hunting? If so, check out Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. It's your ultimate guide to all forms of hound hunting, starting in the flat woods of southern Georgia and covering vast terrains across the nation. We bring you genuine stories where the chase is exhilarating as the catch, recipes, and the brag pages that follow. These adventures will take you down memory lane. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a newcomer to the sport, if it's hound worthy, we've got you covered. Join us in this heart-pounding world of hound hunting. To subscribe or to buy the latest swag, go to southernhoundhunting.com. You can also follow along on Facebook and Instagram, where the hunt never ends. Get ready for the real fair chase experience when you join the pack here at Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. So, to finish that process, I literally started taking the platform away. Like I said, two of the four were probably never using it anyway. They were just going up without it. And you've seen that I put them on top of the box, was feeding them up there, and I actually posted a reel. I don't know, probably the second or third time that I put it on top, and Bishop, she was the one that was struggling. She would get up on the platform, get up on the tailgate. You know, she'd put her front feet up on the top of the box, and then she'd get down, and she would kind of circle the truck and come back. And I don't know why it took her so long, but she was the one that was kind of behind on it. And she can jump on the truck. Like, if you go outside right now in her pen, she's probably standing up on top of the dog box. So it's not – I'm really not putting the correlation between the two. Like, what is the issue? You're jumping on your dog box. Why can't you jump on the truck? But it took her like two sessions of that, and then all of a sudden it wasn't an issue. So I got to that point where everybody was kind of doing it on their own. I pulled the platform away, and I went back inside the box a day or two, and then I went back up on top of the truck for a day or two without the platform. And then once everybody was doing it pretty much seamlessly, I decided to start training another process. So I have never really trained my dogs on a tie-out. I just literally, when I go hunting or we go camping or whatever, I get my tie-out, and I've got the dogs are treed. I got to give it to Kevin and Nancy, though. Those are probably one of my favorite tools that I have. They make a really good product. I've got two 5-dogs. I've got two 5-dog tie-outs. While we're talking about those tie-outs, let me tell you some things that I don't like. So they make the one with the regular snaps, the little tethers that are, you can get them. Kevin will make them for you, whatever size you want. But the one has a regular snaps. The other one have the snap that's got the hinge on it. So if you're just snapping down on it, it's fine. But when you're trying to get the dog off the tether, it's pretty cumbersome, especially if you have a dog, especially these puppies. They're like wild child, you know, they're all over the place. It's very difficult. So if I was going to recommend something, I would recommend the brass snaps, not the other snaps. And I don't know what they're called right off the top of my head, but I will put my older dogs on those and use the regular brass snaps for my puppies from moving forward. So I got to thinking, I'm like, all right, what can I do next? You guys know that the pups, when I tied them up, you know, a couple months ago, they lost their minds and shut down on me. And we've been working that, not a whole lot, but we've worked it several times. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to incorporate feeding time positive, right? A positive association to being tied up. And let's just see how it works. So my thought process is, like, I don't want to drag them to the tether and tie them up, you know, force them into a situation that they're not comfortable with. So the very first day or two, what I did is I would get all the pups with me. And if I have the food in my hand, I had their bowls and they literally follow me wherever. I mean, they're with me, they're going, they kind of know what's happening, you know, they know that when it's feeding time, you know, it's a good thing. So what I did is I set all the food bowls down beside the tethers, which is the tethers or the tie outs that's coming off the lead, right? And as each dog started eating, I would just snap them up in time. Now, I did, every dog wanted to go to the first bowl. You know, they all eat together. You've seen them, you know, in the videos or whatever. So I had to coax them away. I actually carried Briggs. And we're going to talk about Briggs a lot. He is my problem child. So anyway, I put the food down, and as they started eating, I would tie them up. And the first day, I think I dropped a reel on this. The first day, Briggs is kind of standoffish. Bishop literally put pressure, back pressure against the top of her collar. She sat down. She didn't move. Even though she was eating, she recognized that something was not normal. Bronx and Bridger could care less. They was going to eat their food and went on about their business. So we did that. And then the second day it got a little better. And by the third day, it was actually raining. So I did not get a video of that, but I did it anyway. And, you know, I got to thinking about that, you know, like, it doesn't matter when you have dogs, like, if it's raining, if it's sleeting, snowing, the wind's been horrible here for the last couple of days. Last week it was bad. If you're sick, if you're not home, somebody's got to take care of those dogs regardless. But not to get on a tangent there. But so anyway, the third day it was raining a little bit. So I really was in a hurry. So I put the dogs out. I put the food out. The third day I actually did it differently. I actually took the food out with me. I set it up on the top of a fence post. If you watch that reel that I posted, you can see me doing that. I videoed it on my GoPro, but that's like the fifth day, I think. So I set the food up on the fence post. I walked over, I called them by name, you know, snap them up. I got all four of them up, and then I put the food out, let them eat. While they were eating, I was doing my other chores. I was feeding the other dogs. I would clean my pens. The first day or two that I left them by themselves, I did not leave them for a long period of time, right? It was a short increment. That way it wasn't all bad. They're going to find some adversity in there. Like I said, they're still not completely comfortable with it. So at this point in the training process, so I would go feed the dogs. I would clean my pens at the lower lot, and I'd come back up. And I, instead of unsnapping them, and I've learned this from canine. I've learned this from canine training, my police training. If you have tension on a lead, I'll just make a visual for you. Your dog's at the end of the lead. That lead's tight, like an anchor, like it's tight, and you're pulling back, and the dog's pulling forward. Opposition reflex is kind of what it, and we, you know, Ariel posted something on reflex. So I don't want to use that word, but, the dog's pulling forward, you're pulling backwards. You cause that dog to pull forward harder. It'd be like somebody grabbing you by the shoulder and pulling you back. You're going to lean into it and pull forward. So when I release, and this is little detailed things that maybe people don't talk about, maybe people don't think about, but I've always said the attention in the detail, and that's a lot of it. It's attention in the detail. So I would make the dog release the pressure from the tether, which means the tether is not tight like a fishing line anymore. They're coming to me, which is to the center where the tie out is. And I would unsnap them. And while I unsnap them and they are free to go, I would pet them and you know, give them a little bit of, you know, a little bit of love and, hey, good, good, good. And I would walk to the next dog and I would do the same thing. Make sure that that tether didn't have any tension in it, unsnap, play with them for a second. And the dogs literally would not just run off. And you see that on the tailgate too. When I let them out of the box, you know, they stand around, they want to be with you. They're not in shell shock where they just want to get away from there. So, that's some little things that I'm doing, but that was the fourth day. I think I posted a picture, and by the fourth day, I mean, they're laying around. They're getting very comfortable with this. And like I said, the fifth day, I actually, videoed it on my GoPro. And by the fifth day, now guys, slow baby steps, but I done my thing with them, put them out, called for them by name, tied them up, fed them, went and done my other chores, clean pens. I watered all the other dogs, and I come back and I let them loose, and then they go do their thing. And again, every day when I let them loose, I make sure there's no tension on that tether. That way the dogs aren't flying out of there like a slingshot, right? So you competition hunters, I know that that's not what you guys want. You want your dogs like leaving. For me, it's not something that I need in my daily regimen or in my hunting routine. So that's not important to me. So you can see that on the video. But the reason that I decided to do the tether training is I'm going to be doing some traveling, and that's not something that I normally do. And I'm killing two birds with one stone, because the dogs were having issues being tied back. They didn't like it. So I'm actually kind of reversing steps. Instead of doing lead training first, I'm actually doing the tether training, which is going to help me in the long run with the lead training. And I don't know what day I'm on now, probably 10. I'm probably 10 days in. I could be 12. I don't know. Kind of quit counting. I've been doing it for a week or two, but now when I head to where I've got the tie out at, the dogs are literally going and standing in place. Like they're already there waiting on me. And you know, you talk about, Pavlo, your classical conditioning, you know, they're there, they're going and they're waiting. They know what's up. They know they're getting fed there. So they're getting very comfortable with it. I will probably do this for, I don't know, I mean, a couple more, maybe another week, I don't know. And then I'll go back to, I've really got to get them. One thing I have not done with this litter of puppies that I'm behind on, and I'm really behind on it, is changing environments. They have pretty much been here at the house for 6, going on 7 months now. I have taken them on some short trips, but I haven't taken them on a trip, got them out of the box, let them explore a different location. And I will tell you from experience, this is going to put me behind if I don't hurry up and get with that. So that's going to be one of the things coming up that I'm doing, is taking them somewhere else and letting them start exploring. And doing, like I said, we walk back in the fields, we go back to the pond, we go back here in the woods, and they've done all that. But as far as like taking them to a unknown location and letting them out and seeing what their behavior is, I have not done it. So I'm behind the ball. And like I said, last week I did load them back up, take them on a short trip. I did have my first strike out of the box. You guys would be proud. I was going down by an old old farmhouse along a creek, and there was probably 10 or 15 deer standing out in the field that evening. And when I went down the road, nobody said anything, but all the noses were out. And that's what I wanted the GoPro in the box for, so you guys could see this. So nobody was barking on anything. And then I went up the road a good way, I don't know, another mile or two. And then I turned around and I come back by. Well, when I come back by, Bronx was on the passenger side, and he like just come unglued, but he could see the deer standing in the field. So, that's that, but he did open, and I'm like, you know, he's never, now these dogs have never, I've never allowed them to run off game. They are so gamey that I know that if I do, they're going to be extremely difficult to break. And I can tell that in their personalities. I can tell that with their mannerisms. So I've been a little bit more cautious of what and where I'm at with them. So that's something else that, you know, again, attention to the details. You know, some dogs need a little encouragement. I call it a horseshoe. When we're in canine training, I call this the horseshoe. So if you just take your finger and start at 6 o'clock and make you a horseshoe up to 12 and around back to six, not a circle, but a horseshoe. Some dogs are at the bottom of the horseshoe, so they need some encouragement to kick in those drives and to get the performance out of them. The dogs that are already at the top of the horseshoe, like, you need to rein them back a little bit, right? I don't need to encourage them. I don't need to give them a whole lot of leeway to get into mischief, because once you do, those dogs are already at the top of the pyramid there, and they're going to be a whole lot harder to get under control, if that makes sense. So I can see with the dogs, all these pups' personalities, I can see it with their gaminess, that I've been very cautious. But anyway, he's never run a deer. I'm sure that he's probably seen them out here in the fields at night and so on and so forth, but literally he come unglued like an old dog that had been doing it for years. So encouraging on that end, that, hey, like he smells something, he sees something, and he recognizes that it's not a horse. You see in the videos that the horses come right up to the fence. I did not do that on purpose. Somebody asked me on the post if that's how I was breaking them from, you know, chasing livestock. No, it's not. It just happened that way. What I've done is when they go out and start doing it, I get on them. So that wasn't my intentions, but the horses are always curious. I've told you the horses stay around the fence. So the front yard and the back side of the yard, the horses are always there. The dog pens go back up against the fence. So they're getting their taste of horses, but yeah, that was not intentional, but you can see that the dogs really don't pay any attention to them. I've conquered that for the most part right now. They're not running Chloe's horses all over the fields, and they're not barking at cows either. They're going over to Travis's, which is on the other side of the driveway, and they're going over there and doing what dogs do, rolling in the cow poop and, you know, just rooting around and, you know, just being curious, using their noses. So, they know it was a different odor, which was a deer. It was not something that they're normally smelling, which is horses and cows. We don't have a lot of cats around here. So that, like I said, it was encouraging. And at the same time, I understand that this is going to, if I let the reins go on these pups a little bit, I'm going to have my hands full. And if it happens, I'll take care of it. And I've already told myself that patience is paramount. I've got to have patience. They're already trying my patience. And this is going to go back to, well, Briggs is the number one culprit, but they all, so they're out of my Kate female. And Kate has got a mind of her own. She is the sweetest little dog that you ever want to be around. But when she's out in the woods, she has a mind of her own and she's going to do what she wants to do. So I have to stay on her. And when I stay on her, I mean, I'm using my tone button with her more than any dog that I have. She will start ranging out. And when I say ranging out, she's getting in that 700 to 1,000 yards away from me. She does not have a voice that carries that well. So if she opens, it's hard for dogs to hear her, or it's hard for me to get dogs with her. So these pups have a lot of her in them. They will get over here in the cow field, and I'm ready to put them up. I have shortened their time out as they've gotten a little bit older and a little bit older. And again, that's because I don't want to leave them out and I don't want them running deer through three states. So like I said, when I'm feeding, they're out for 30, 40 minutes every day, 45 minutes every day. They're not out all day like they were. So after I've got done, you know, with my tie out work, they'll stay around the yard and then they'll go over to the cow field. And the other day, and this is going to be another What's Up Wednesday episode, because this is going to take some time. So I don't want to give too much of it away. In fact, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to tell you what's going on, but I've already started on it. So Briggs is the pup out of the litter that he'll be around you. You've heard us talk about this before, but he could really care much. He don't really care much about human interaction. Like really, he don't. You can holler for him and he'll come and he'll piddle fart around and be right there. And then he goes and does his own thing. And then you can holler for him. And what I'm noticing is they were out in the cow field last week. And I hollered and three of them come running. I put them up and I look around and Briggs is not there. And I walk over to the edge of the driveway and I look over. And this is about a 15 acre field. It's a pretty big field. And Briggs is out down in the bottom. Travis has got a water trough down there towards the main gate where he comes in and out. Well, Briggs is down there. So I holler at him and he looks at me. And guys, I've told you this before. You can count to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4. And between 6 and 10 seconds, that dog's made up his mind what he's going to do. If they are not moving toward you in that 6 to 10 seconds, there's no sense in wasting any more time. So they're not going to do it. So he throws his head up. He looks at me. We acknowledge each other. I see him. He sees me. And he stands there for, like I said, about 10, 15 seconds. And then he just drops his head and goes on about his thing. We've all seen this behavior with dogs, right? So I holler at him again. And he looks at me. This time it's shorter. Like he already knows I'm not coming back over there. So I have to talk myself off the ledge. I'm like, Heath, woosah, right? And I go down to the basement. I get a handful of food and I start into the field. Well, when I start into the field, he comes running. Now he avoids me. He knows that Dad's already hollered at me a handful of times. And listen, I've never punished these dogs. These dogs have never had any kind of negative interaction on my part. So anyway, he comes, but he avoids me. He goes around the fence. He runs around the back side of the house. I'm at the front of the house, and he goes straight to his pen. So I take a deep breath on my way, and I get to the pen. I drop a few kibbles of food because that's what I want him to do. I want him to get in the pen, so I don't want to punish that behavior. Now, everything in between there, I'm not okay with. So I shut the door, and we go on. So a couple days later, it's him and Bridger. And again, Briggs is the one that's the hardest to get back. So I've already made up my mind. Like I've got to, like, this has got to stop. I've got to fix this. You're acting just like your mama and I don't like it. So same type of scenario. They both look at me The second time when I went back with the food, Bridger come on. And when Bridger, when Bridger got to the fence, Briggs come on that day too. So he was a little bit more, because it's monkey see, monkey do. Remember we talked about dogs learning from other dogs. So that happened. So I put him up. Well, the next day I changed it up, and, even though I had a plan in place, that plan did not work. So I'm going to give you guys training tip 202, because this is about where we're at. All right. So I've got the new TT25s, right? And I've already done this with all of my collars, except the two new ones that I had, and I had not done it yet. Shame on me. But you have to switch out your prongs to the longer ones. Okay. I done it with my police one, the one that I'm using for Pino. And very seldom do I ever have to use that at all, period. But I switched it out. I've got three new ones that I'm running right now on, Spook and Kate and Sassy. All those have been switched out. But for whatever reason, I had not switched others out. And that was the first time. I had them out of the box and had them charged, but I hadn't used them yet. So this is a tip, I'm telling you. If you're going to work with dogs that you need to, you need to add some stem, the tone really doesn't matter. But if you need to stem a dog, you really need to have that reassurance that when you speak, it has, you're able to enforce whatever you're asking. And so the long prongs, you have to do it. You need to switch them out. And as the dog gets more and more trained and less distracted, because distractions are huge right now for the puppies. That's my issue, is the distractions. So anyway, change out the prongs, make the prongs longer. And use it. I'm going to probably keep it on mine for a year or two before I ever switch back, if I do switch back. All of mine, like I said, I've got five of the new TT25s, and all five of them have the long prongs on them now. So when I try to send that Bluetooth signal to Briggs, he can receive that signal, because he did not receive that signal. And he's thinking, all right, what does this mean? Because I kept hitting the tone button, as that's the only thing I had. And the first couple times, you know, I get that behavioral change. I get the ears up, and he'll stop what he's doing and listen for a second. And then after about the third or fourth time, it's like, yeah, well, I'm going on about my business. So put your longer prongs on there. You're going to need them if you want to communicate effectively. So next episode, we will move into we'll finish up with the tie out. And if I'm doing anything in between, I'm sure we're going to probably change environments between now and then. And we will talk about how I am fixing the distractions and not listening. The pups have been really good up to this point. Like when I holler or I whistle, they're pretty much, I mean, it's pretty much Johnny on the spot. Like bam, bam, bam. They can even be down in the barn. They'll go down in the barn when Chloe and them are feeding, or they have the horses out. They'll be down in the barn with them, and I can whistle or I can holler. And I'm telling you, it looks like a racetrack from the barn door up through the field, under the fence, back into the yard. I haven't had any issues. Like I said, now dogs are maturing a little bit. Their investigation, I guess, wants to be a little bit more. And they're becoming more distracted. And with distracted, we've got to make sure that we send a clear signal that this is what I'm asking of you, and I need you to do it. And I want to keep it positive too. Like I'm not trying to make this a negative. I'm going to keep it positive. So on the next episode of What's Up Wednesday, that's what we're going to get into. See you guys then.